Welcome to the Nature Photo Guys podcast,
where we talk about nature photography from gear to our philosophies and everything in between.
So grab a cup of coffee, sit back and relax.
You're listening to Joe Desjardins
and Chris Gibbs, the Nature Photo Guys.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Nature Photo Guys podcast. We're super stoked for our guest speaker tonight. Sure. But before we introduce him and bring him on, Chris, what have you been up to?
Well, you and I got out to Lake Minnewanka there and did a bit of some fun stuff there, a bit of a sunrise shoot. So I'm sure some of you saw some of our reels that have been posted there.
And we have more to share. Minnewanka was fun.
It was fun, for sure. We had a lot of fun. So, and then you know what? Actually, I was lucky enough to join. I'm kind of a big a sports shooter as well. So actually, joined.
Yeah, big the, Edmonton Flame, right?
Not at all.
Edmonton Flame.
Yeah, see, you're a big fan. Hockey fan. I see.
Edmonton fan.
No way, Flames all the way. Anyway, yeah. So I was actually able to head to the Saddle Dome and join the camera store at their pro hockey photo workshop, basically. So we actually got to, follow Jerry Thomas for a while. And we went all around the dome and got to take some shots, went on the catwalk. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We had a good time and we actually got to do that during a Flames practice. So that was pretty cool. So.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Right on. Yeah. So you got to see the setup up top, the rafters, like they use strobes, right?
They use strobes up there. Yeah. I knew that they did that. And I wasn't sure how many people use that. Just Jerry's actually the one who uses those. Maybe some assistants of his here and there, but, the news shooters come in, they just shoot ambient, right? So it's a little different, 100%. But yeah, there's like, I think there's 8 strobes up there and they took us across the catwalk and just about crap my pants. It's a little high up there.
Is it? Oh my God.
Well, at some point, there's a railing and then there's about a 10-inch gap and then more railing and you can easily just trip and fall. It didn't feel safe, but me and heights don't really go together. So
that's awesome. Yeah, that was pretty cool. I mean, the Flames games I've been to, I could see the flash.
I don't know
about you, but if you pay attention, you can see when the flash, nobody notices, right?
No.
They're paying attention to the game.
And Jerry said now that, when he tells people that they're there, that's all people can see now. So
that's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
And once you know they're there, you got out there a little bit ago as well. You got out to the field.
Actually. Yeah. Family day, long weekend, headed out to, Arum Lodge. I hope I'm saying that correctly. Aurum Lodge out near Nordegg.
Nice.
And, we went to explore Abraham Lake and area. So it was really cool. Little windy.
I'm surprised. I heard it's not that windy there.
Sure. You should see some of the reels I'll be posting too. Some cool bubbles, awesome cracks in the ice, that kind of thing.
Nice.
Went into a few falls, got some pretty cool shots there. Oh, it was a nice 4 days of just rest, relaxation, nice. Exploring. Went into Nordegg a little bit, went to, I think it's called Miner's Cafe.
Okay.
Had some phenomenal pie. I guess they're well known for their pie. We actually brought one home.
Oh, nice.
Not too much over the last little bit, but at least, you and I got out a few times anyways to, get the cameras going and that sort of thing. So, that's about it for now. So,
and the cool part is we got lots of plans, lots of interviews ahead or more conversations, I guess, in the future.
Yeah.
So
we got another 3 booked.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of lining people up. Everybody's busy, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
We can do them back to back, or it might be, week to week, month to month, right? It really depends on what everybody's doing.
That's right.
And especially with spring coming, it's going to get busy for a lot of things for a lot of people, right? So,
yes. And us included.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I can't wait till May gets here. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
So, cool. Well, you know what, guys, we are super excited. Our guest this evening is Mark Payton. He's an extremely talented wildlife and other type of photographer.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That I just recently found out about, cause I thought he was just a wildlife photographer.
Right.
But he photographs other genres too. So we'll let him,
stay tuned talk to hear
about you. Yeah, you bet. Sure. So, let's introduce him. Everybody, let's welcome Mark Payton to the podcast.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're super excited to have you here. You know, Chris and I have been talking about it. We're really excited that you accepted the invite.
Yeah.
So, let's just get right to it.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, I mean, Mark, why don't you tell us a little about yourself and so the viewers know who you are?
Yeah, I've been doing photography since probably the mid 80s, back in the film days. My first duty station picked up a Minolta Maxim 7000 or 9000. So I was a Minolta guy for a couple of years. Took some photography classes when I was in Korea for a year just to pass the time, stay out of the bars and kind of live a clean life. And moved up to Fairbanks, met my wife, got married, shooting a lot of the Northern Lights and stuff like that. And of course, I developed a lot of film. I learned how to develop film, do black and white, color film, print film. Mm-hmm. I'd go out and shoot Northern Lights, you know, in 40 below weather, and my camera started freezing up, and I was like, this isn't going to work. So got frustrated, picked up a Canon F1N, I believe it was, which was kind of a high-end film body. I don't know if you guys shot film before, but in the day.
Started back on film, for sure. Yeah, film,
But anyway, that didn't, went into that because it was all mechanical, except for faster shutter speeds required the battery. So anyways, that kind of solved that problem. Basically shot that body until I moved in to digital, which was in 2006. And everything was, I shot some weddings, probably, 20, 30 weddings on film back in the day. And I guess I did have some other film bodies after that had the eye control focus, and I think the Elon 2E or
The 6E. I don't know if you have that.
And the A2, I think an A2E or something. Yeah, yep. A2 it was. But anyways, so I shot those. And then about 2006, we had moved from the East Coast back to Montana and still just doing some portrait stuff and occasional weddings. But I wound up moving into digital, started out with a 20D. I had like a 70 to 200, 24 to 70, and, just a couple lenses. That sounds about right. But anyways, and then I, progressed to the R5 and, started shooting more. Actually, that's not true. The 1DS, Mark One, I think it was 12 megapixel camera, whatever it was.
The 1DS. Yep. Yep.
Before the 1DXs. So then that image quality just didn't stand up. So I'm trying to think of the next 5D, the 5D.
Oh, the 5D
Mark III. Oh, the 5D. I had the 5D original Mark 5D.
Anyways.
Mark III, yep.
But, and that's what, that was my bread and butter for weddings. I shot a bunch of weddings, family portraits, senior portraits, stuff like that. Still haven't touched wildlife to this point, right?
So
I literally, shooting with a 70 to, actually, I was shooting a lot of primes because I thought all the wedding photographers were shooting 85, 1.2s, 51.2s, 35. Yeah. And then one day I was like, I'm tired of this inconsistency and with autofocus and the shallow depth of field. It just wasn't flying. And I decided to rent from lensrental.com, decided to try the zooms. And after I shot them, I was like, I'm done with these primes. I sold all of them.
Yeah.
and I shot the 24 to set, or I think I bought the 7200 first. Everything was 2.8, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got the 24 to 70, and I might have kept like a 35 1.4 for a while. Mm-hmm. But anyways, we'd go out to Coeur d'Alene. We frequent Coeur d'Alene, Spokane area, just kind of a getaway place. And all of a sudden I discovered that this bald eagle migration happens every end of November, December timeframe. There's about 300 bald eagles that show up to feed on the kokanee salmon spawn. So anyways, I'm out there and these guys got these giant lenses and they're just, I'm looking at the back of their cameras. I'm like, oh, this is just junk with the 70 to 200. And, you know, so I think the next year I bought the 2X extender, the version 3. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, with good light, that worked okay. And I was like, I booked enough weddings. I made enough profit. Plus I work a full-time job as a federal employee with a Montana Air National Guard.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I had that income that pays the bills. And then this was kind of business.
Sure.
To make a profit, but also obtain some gear.
Yeah.
And anyways, I decided to drop about $6,000 on that 400 2.8 version, the IS version 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I got that in my hands, that was in 2018. So I didn't even have that lens until 2018, January of 2018. And I just fell in love with it. So went and bought the 1.4 extender just to see. But, you know, usually if I'm going to throw one on, just throw the 2X on just because,
sure,
you know, either you're going to shoot, you know, I'm going to shoot the 400 just plain bare, or I'm going to throw an extender on if I can't get close enough. But, and that's been a great combo. And, you know, I think, I can't remember, you know, I didn't even make it into Yellowstone until 2019, that winter. Of course we have the National Bison Range here. So, I did there's a lot of bull elk out there and, you know, of course the bison and some black bear. And so I kind of got to test everything out there. And then got hooked on North Yellowstone, you know, that Gardner to Cook City stretch there.
God, we've never been, and we've been talking about going. Like, we just, yeah, never been down, and just seen so many amazing wildlife images there, and just heard of the experiences. Because, you know, a lot of the other guys we follow, you know, posting video of, you know, the wolves and the bison and the bears and stuff. Yeah. So. Yeah, that's definitely a must place to go. But
I've definitely been to Montana and Coeur d'Alene and the Coeur d'Alene Spokane Valley area quite a bit. Yeah. I used to camp there quite a bit when, you know, for the years with the kids when they were growing up, and been a lot of Montana, Kalispell and that area. The road to the, or going to the Sun Road, done a bit of that. But on the wildlife side, yeah, I haven't been down there for that yet. So,
well, you know, Glacier's never been that great for wildlife. Except for the mountain goat, and there's some bighorn sheep up there, and then there's moose. They're a little bit harder to come by, and you know, I have been through Jasper and Banff and all that. Funny story though, my wife and I, with our 18 months old, we headed down in a Honda Accord, sold all of our possessions, shipped a few things in boxes to the East Coast of Virginia. Hence I've got a little accent here. You can tell, but that's also, part Texas too. But anyways, we drove in the middle of winter, down the Cassiar Highway, came up through, cut over through, Jasper, stayed in Jasper overnight in one of the hotels. I don't remember which one it was. And then, and of course I was more into landscape then. So I, you know, got lots of cool winter. Everything was shot on slide film.
Yeah.
And, right. So I still have some of that, but, anyways, we, drove all the way down through there, stopped at, we lived in Sealy Lake, or my dad did. We, you know, stopped there, visited, and then head on down all the way to Texas, to Georgia, and then back up to Virginia with a 18 month old. And it was, quite a ride, but yeah, to cover that in the middle of winter, in a Honda Accord front wheel drive.
My gosh.
So, but you know, I was a seasoned winter driver, so you know, wasn't anything. So,
so is that the only time you've been to Jasper then since then?
No, or I've been through it. No, I haven't been in, since 1993. I haven't been to Canada.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, okay.
Of course, now I have to have a passport to get there, which is just an obstacle. I know I could get one, but, so I need to get that, because I've been, since my social media kind of blew up over the last few months, I've been getting a lot of Africa trip offers and, you know,
yeah,
New Zealand and a bunch of bunch of different places. So,
100%.
You got to kind of sort through what's legit and what's not, but
yeah, no, 100%. But I mean, even coming to Canada, like, I mean, I know we've got a lot of some of the biggest bull elk, I think, in North America up this way too, right?
Yeah, so, I've got a few buddies that have went out there. They're just out there this past fall and got some amazing footage with the bull elk there. And you know, I know, you know, Jasper, that town is full of elk just walking around like squirrels.
So, for sure.
But yeah, that's, you know, I definitely want to get back up there, and I'll probably get a passport this year just so I can, you know, take a trip up that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, I didn't start wildlife till 2018. And then I got shipped off to Kuwait for 6 months in 2020. So right as COVID kind of hit. And so when I came back, I got off my quarantine stuff, and then my wife and I took our first trip to Yellowstone, and well, to the Tetons in over 30 years, because we've been married over 35 years.
Oh, and, wow, congrats.
But yeah, thanks. But it'd been a long time since I'd been to the Tetons, and yeah. I prefer that over Yellowstone. There's more bear action. There's more bull moose action. And then it's just, the scenery is just incredible. So that's my go-to place. Nice. Of course, it's about 6.5 hours from where we live. And Yellowstone is I guess about 4.5. So it's Yellowstone's more convenient.
Nice. Sure.
But, you know, I seem to have better luck every time I go to the Tetons, and Yellowstone can be kind of hit and miss, especially in the winter months. So, the bison might be on out of sight or too far away to shoot, or you're not going to be able to, to get to them. Like this last trip, I shot photos of coyotes and red fox, and I didn't take a single bison shot. There was, I don't know. I'm a little picky. If it's not a big bull, I'm not interested. Maybe red dogs. Oh, yeah. Those are good. But I'm about big bulls, big rams, big.
Yeah.
I want impressive stuff. And you know, a cow and calf in the right moment is a good subject too. But
sure,
that's just what I prefer. So
I don't think you're alone.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what we all tend to gravitate to eventually as wildlife photographers, right? You know, you're kind of, you're trophy hunting with the camera, right? So,
And I noticed you guys are shooting. Of course, I know I'm all over the place here, but I moved from that, the 5D Mark III, I got my first 1DX, absolutely loved it. That was the first 1DX version. And then about a year and a half, 2 years later, I got the 1DX Mark II, which I absolutely loved. No complaints. And then everybody's gravitating towards this R5, and I'm still not 100% sold on it, to be honest with you. I absolutely hate switching video mode from stills to video. I've even got the little red button program, but I just don't. It just seems more cumbersome than the 1DX ever did. So
yes,
but I do absolutely love the megapixels it has,
and
the image quality is nice and stuff right out of the camera. I mean, I don't have to do a whole lot to my images most of the time, because I use a light meter. I shoot everything manual. I'm basically looking and seeing where my exposure's at, and of course, I like to shoot wide open 99% of the time if I can, if it makes sense. Not all the time does it make sense, but so if you set that wide open to 2.8 and you get your shutter speed or your ISO where you want it, and then you just fill in the blank with the shutter speed and to get the right exposure, and so it's almost like a program mode when you think about it, but because it just comes natural. So so I'm stuck in the mirrorless world for now, I guess.
But you still have your 1D?
So I sold my 1DX Mark II to my oldest daughter. And so she uses it. She, I've got two of my kids are basically, or one's full-time wedding and portrait photographer.
Oh, wow.
And, great. And, my oldest daughter does a little bit of real estate and, also, does photo, you know, portraits and mm-hmm. part-time weddings. So
nice.
But so, yeah, if I wanted it, I could go grab it, but I do need to get another body, and I've been kind of holding off on the R1. I'm hoping that's going to pop out. Cause as cool as the, R3 looks, mm-hmm. I've got a couple of friends with those and they say they're amazing. I still want more megapixels. So,
well, there's rumors in R5 Mark II as well, right? So,
I really missed
megapixels.
That.
So,
I know. Was it you, Chris, that has the 1DX Mark II?
Joe's got the 1DX Mark II. I have the R5 and the R5C for the cinema side, right? So,
Yeah, and I just like the build quality. I like that integrated grip. I just once you shoot a 1D series. It's hard to go back. I didn't want to go back to the,
I couldn't agree more. I still have it here. Like I was telling, I mean, you know, mirrorless and DSLR and okay. So there's just an adapter, you know what I mean? I can live with that, but it's going to be hard to let go. Cause like you said, I love that thing's a tank, like built like a tank.
Oh, it is.
And that grip built in and everything. And it's just, and I mean, that's an, before the mirrorless, I mean, that was the camera. I know they made a Mark III, but that Mark II, I mean, even at high ISO, it's just killed it. Like I just, it's going to be a hard camera to eventually let go. So
yeah,
but I totally agree with you.
You know, I've got my, so I picked up that version 4 or version 2 of the 400 2.8.
We saw that. Yes, we saw your two comparisons. Can you guess which one is which?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Well, that was kind of a plug to get somebody to buy the damn thing. But you know, the funny thing is I didn't, I wasn't looking for that lens. That landed in my lap, with a local video production company, Burton Productions, might as well plug them. Good group of guys, but they were reaching out, hey, you know, anybody that needs a version 2, you know, we're shooting Reds and we don't really need it anymore. And they shot some college football games with it. And I mean, it was a pristine condition. And I was like, you know, if it's between this price and this price, I'm going to get it. And, anyways, I went and looked and it was just immaculate condition, just like mine, frankly, mine. Mm-hmm. I mean, except for a couple little, paint chips. That thing is pristine and as sharp as a tack at 2.8. Like I had no reason to get rid of it. And, it helps build these guns right here.
No kidding. Right.
Yeah. You know, if you see some of my reels, you know, some of those I'm shooting, it's the same setting that I shot the picture, but I never did any behind the scenes, up until about, well, maybe I was doing some before November, but before things kind of blew up, I wasn't really recording any behind the scenes. And on that last trip, to the Tetons, I was like, you know what, I'm going to do some behind the scenes and see if I can make my reels more interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, that one with me throwing the camera up, unsupported. And then it's a zoomed in shot of a bison, frost covered bison in Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. And that thing just went nuts and, I didn't anticipate it to do anything, but, and that just changed everything. That was the game, you know, over 11.8 million views on it right now, I think.
That's awesome.
Oh, sick. Geez. So did you notice a huge, uptake in, your followers too on Instagram because of that? Or,
well, I don't know. How's 22,000 followers in a day sound?
What? Are you serious? Yeah. That is crazy.
I'm not kidding you.
Oh, wow. God.
And then I was gaining 1,000 followers a day for weeks.
It's all reels.
Yeah. Like I don't
basically
even
because of the reels.
I've kind of, it's slowed down a bit. You know, I think I'm at 184,000 followers, but, before Thanksgiving, I was at 49,000 followers. How's that for you?
You're kidding. So,
jeez.
Yeah. So,
wow. See, you cracked the code. That's for sure. Cause I mean, they were talking about it, you know?
Yeah. So I actually, the funny thing was they had one go viral, not that big, but it got 8 million views. It was a bull out bugling in Yellowstone at nighttime, and the bull standing in the middle of the highway. And of course I'm not in any hurry. So I pull up to him and flick my high beams on just to see if he'll move. And I turn him back down just to keep him out of his face. And he just starts bugling. You can hear bulls all over the place. So I get my, I think I had an iPhone 11 or 12, and mm-hmm. it wasn't as good as this 13, which is the one I shoot most of my videos on.
Oh, okay.
And I shot through the window, and it's, you know, my Toyota FJ Cruiser's windshield's been pelted with so much rock and grit and debris, and I've got yeah. cracks all in it. Like, I'm surprised I haven't gotten a ticket yet, but but anyways, I can see out of it. And but I, you know, the video through the windshield wasn't any good, so I reached out and he bugled real quick. But I put a 6-second clip, I think it was, on Instagram of him bugling and then dropping his head down, and that one blew up, and I doubled my followers in like 2 weeks on that one. So,
what? So, and did you use any special like hashtags, or did you just do hashtag reels? Like, just,
oh, I used to hashtag the crap out of everything.
Yeah.
And it you know, it just really doesn't matter. You could do 4 hashtags or 20 hashtags. Yeah. I don't think it makes a difference.
Sure. Not for the reels anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, so, and I was still posting photos and posting, you know, trying to post reels with behind the scenes with the camera and the tripod set up. And I don't know what happened, but of course, once I was kind of going viral with this frost covered bison one, then every video that I put up was getting, you know, 20, 30, 40,000 views or more, and, wow. you know, 4,000, 5,000 likes, which, you know, I was struggling back, you know, back in November, if I got 400 or 500 likes.
You know, yeah, what? It's so true. I mean, when I first started with Instagram, I was getting the likes, like just on still images, you know, I don't know, say 5 years ago, some of the images, 8, 10, 12,000 likes. Mm-hmm. That same picture now, I would get 200 or 300.
Yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. And I used to, I'd get an image that might get, you know, 2 or 3,000 likes mm-hmm. or something, but mm-hmm. yeah, it was just, and finally I was like, well, I'm going to start doing these reels, you know, and it, like I said, I think it took me 4 years to get to 19,000 followers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was posting everything, you know, mm-hmm. weddings,
yeah,
that you definitely don't want to do that. It's gotta be a little niche.
Sure.
Yeah, for sure. You know? No, I hear you there. Yeah.
And anyways, it took 4 years to get to that. And then that viral bull elk back in Memorial Day weekend of 2021, got me up to about 44,000. And then I just kind of kept creeping up.
Wow.
You know, but nothing was really catching, you know, mm-hmm. catching on fire until that bull moose trip up to the Tetons. That's kind of my pilgrimage each year, is around Veterans Day weekend. I head up that way and, you know, stay 3 or 4 days if I can, you know, 'cause I work a full-time job and then you know, I'm gone when I'm doing that gig. So when I come home on the weekends, I kind of like spend time with my wife and my grandkids and,
oh, 100%. Yeah.
So, you know, it's tough. So, but, you know, I retire in June 1st from the military and my federal side, and we're going to do some KOA work camp stuff. And so I'll be based out of Missoula, you know, 99% of the time. And that's going to.
Sweet. That's a great gig.
Yeah. And it'll get me, you know, more time maybe on my days off to go out and, you know, get to Yellowstone more often or whatever. But
yeah, sure. Yeah.
But we'll be kind of busy in the summer with the KOA until, you know, so once fall hits, then
yeah,
you can guarantee I'll be out that way. So
100%. That's awesome. Well, you know what, Mark, you covered a good 5 of our questions there. We were like, so how'd you get into photography? We covered that. What gear do you shoot? It's obviously Canon. All the good stuff. It's your go-to mm-hmm. lens. Certainly sounds like the 400-28.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
With a couple extenders.
How do you find the four the 400-28 with the 2x version 3 on there? Are you, I know it's 800-56, but are you getting the decent image quality? Like, are a lot of your images shot at 800, or are they?
Yeah. Yeah. If you
look, they are, right?
If you look at a lot of them, I don't like to crop a whole lot. I like to get as close as I ethically can to animals. And, you know, of course in Yellowstone, that's 25 yards, you know, for anything but wolves and bear. And then that's 100, which frankly, I think 100 yards is too damn far, to get a decent shot, but that, you know, 400 with a 2x giving me 800 is pretty good. And it's been an excellent combo on the 1DX Mark II. I know this last trip I was using it on the Fox, and I think I was getting having some issues with heat shimmer.
Oh yeah.
Which,
yeah,
that's a killer. And it doesn't matter if you're using an extender or not, but I was just getting a lot of soft stuff when, you know, the light was just the way it was. You know, you got bright light and cool air coming off the ice or snow, and that's just ruins your images. You know, they look great if you like a soft image, but yeah, you know, I've never had any issues with the older version, the first IS version, and either one of those extenders. Just, I always felt like I got exceptional results with it. I'm hoping that's the case with the new one, but I, you know, because of the lighting conditions or the temperature offsets, I had quite a few to toss in the garbage. They just weren't any, you know, they weren't sharp enough. With the other setup, it didn't seem to be a problem. I mean, I still got that obviously, but it's so frustrating. Even in the spring, I'll go down to the Tetons to photograph, grizzly bears and you know, it's the ground temperature's still cold, but that warmer air's out and you'll get these, you know, grizzly bears standing up, you know, on hind end and just like a killer shot. And you go back and you look and it's just garbage. And I don't care if it's the 400-28 by itself or whatever. So
the reality of wildlife photography, right? You know,
it drives me insane. So either you get out. That's why you need a camera that's really good in low light. So you can either shoot early in the morning or late in the evening.
Oh, 100%. Exactly. Yeah. And that's where that 1DX, the Mark II, was awesome. Like I couldn't, some of the images I got at like 12,500, I actually shot some wolves at 25,000 and don't get me wrong. You know, yourself, like they're a bit on the grainy side, but you know, you run them through something like Topaz and you print them on a canvas, you know, like I always say feathers and fur work great on canvases. Man, it's hard to tell it was shot at 25,000, you know, like that's what I mean. It's going to be hard to part with that camera.
You know, I've shot some Milky Way that I've probably pushed up to 10,000 or 12,000, but I've never gone beyond that. I've never used Topaz either. So,
yeah, right. Well, it was an accident at 25,000 because I teach a lot of I shoot manual, the auto ISO, and this was about 10:30. It was getting close to 10:30, say 10 o'clock in the evening in Jasper. And I was heading back in and I had my, you know, it was a 500 F4. And I had it set to 1/500 of a second because that's, I know I can hand hold that in a pinch, right? You know, that shutter speed. And here's this wolf and we're kind of playing peekaboo and, you know, I was getting some images and stuff. And I got an image of her coming and just turning and looking at me. I got 3 frames off, but like I've told everybody, if I didn't have the auto ISO, it would have just been a blurred mess. Right. So I'm still happy I got the image, even though it was at 25,000, I still have it. It's still something I can work with, but that's the reason it's at 25,000. You know,
yeah, I'd probably use that if Sasquatch walked out across.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know that I'd do
exactly
the other way. So,
and it was one of those things. I'm heading back. I'm like, oh crap! Here's a wolf. You know, take some photos, do what I can with it, right? But I never want to push it that high. It's just it was it was a really great opportunity. And like I said, it didn't actually turn out all that bad, right? So, but yeah, that camera again has just been phenomenal. So
I have to say, I rented the 400 2.8 Mark II for the elk rut in the fall. And I've seen, you know, I saw your content and there's a few people that have been using the 400 2.8 and I was just so impressed. So I thought I'm going to rent this for the fall. And honestly, after seeing the content that I created with it, not only photo, but video, I don't know. Everything else I see, I'm just not happy with it anymore. The 400 2.8 just produces an amazing image. And, you know, you were talking about the little red button on the R5 going, you know, the scenario. My whole goal with getting the R5 was to, because I do a lot of video, my background's video more than photo, but in the last number of years, I've been doing a lot more wildlife and had been doing landscape photos. But the scenario was it was going to be a perfect hybrid camera for me so I could go from photos to videos. But the amount of issues that, and Joe and I have both been through this, the amount of issues that, okay, switching over to video and you got your ND on, or you forget you have your variable ND on and you want to take photos in low light conditions, it just was a massive hassle. So, and I do a lot of real estate videos as well. So I was having some overheating issues just with the camera being on just way too long for video. So that's why I picked up the R5C. So now I'm pretty much dedicated to the R5's the photo camera and the R5C's the video camera. And I'm just not fooling around anymore. You know what I mean? I just kind of separated those scenarios and I've seen, you know, it seems to have worked for me. I mean, I'm going to be for the spring here, I'm going to be renting the 400 2.8 again in Canada. Though, unfortunately that lens is $16,000. So I can't afford that right now, but, one day.
Yeah. Well, I know a guy that's got the version one.
Do you?
He's got a pretty sweet price on it.
Okay. Well, I'll keep an eye on that.
I actually got a guy from Calgary, kind of kicking tires on it.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, okay. Interested.
So I think it's a great lens. I mean, you know, I need to sell it to put on the balance to pay the newer one off. But
you know,
if I don't sell it soon, I might get rid of the new one and just keep shooting the old one because it's been a great lens. I actually, aside from being heavy, that's it. I mean, I don't really notice an image quality difference. In fact, my mind keeps telling me that the older one's sharper, but I don't know.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
So, but it's a, like I said, that's been a great lens. And I, you know, a year after I bought that 400 2.8, the version one, I found a pristine 600 F4 version one IS and I got it and I had the 1DX at the time and I could not get that thing to micro focus adjust to get a sharp image.
Serious?
Wide open. No, I don't know what.
Wow.
I mean, we're talking the glass was pristine. It looked like a museum piece.
Yeah.
And, and I just like, I 3 months, I sold it. I sold it to a lady that photographed dogs, I think, in a dog shows or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, if you stopped it down to F8, you know, it was decent, but it wasn't 400 2.8 sharp. So I just like, there's what's the point in having it if I got to stop it down. So,
Exactly.
No kidding. Cause I've had huge success micro adjusting all my camera bodies to my lenses.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and I have too, but it wasn't working for that one. And you know, it's a shame that I didn't have the R5 at the time to see if it would have been okay on that body, but I just, and I didn't like the hand holding and trying to shoot that. It just seemed like it was front loaded way in the front. It was heavy and it wasn't as practical for the stuff I like to do. Like I can do super tight headshots, you know, where you're basically doing chest height and horizontal shots and just I could shoot in front of a set of dumpsters as a background with a portrait shot and it just completely blurred out at 2.8. You don't even know what's in the background. And, and you know, it's, there's just a lot of things I love about that lens. I don't really have a use for the 600 anymore. Now that I know what I can do with the 2.8. So.
Well, a 400 with a 1.4 and a 2x. Yeah, what more do you need for wildlife photography?
Yeah.
A 45 megabyte sensor. You can crop in if you have to. I mean, like it's done. You're there. Like, you know, because I was going to ask you if you were thinking of getting something larger. Cause, You know, the 600's probably a decent size, good reach for, like you're saying, like Yellowstone, where things are a lot farther away, and then you put it a few times. Well, I know you'd still be shooting at, that'd be what, 1200 F8, but still, I mean, some decent reach there. But
well, so the, if you use the 2X on a 600, that was almost useless. I felt it didn't, it was a lot slower to focus, and it was, you know, in and out, and I wasn't having very good luck with that. I think it works great with a 2.8 lens, but I don't know about an F4. Mm-hmm. You know, I at least I wasn't having good luck with it. So,
sure.
That's been the setup I've been going with. And I tell you what, if Canon doesn't get with the program, Nikon's got that 400 2.8 with a 1.4 built-in teleconverter. Mm. I might have to jump ship if they don't.
What? What? We may have to end this conversation right now. Here. Holy geez.
So if Nikon's listening,
oh, there's a plug. Okay,
yeah. Nice, nice.
No, I've been loyal to Canon. Well, since I guess would have been 1988. I've been shooting.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Well, I've been shooting longer, but but I had that little brief Minolta.
Sure,
of course they went bankrupt, but But yeah, I've been diehard Canon because, you know, once you acquire all the glass, it doesn't make any sense to switch to Sony and then back to Nikon. And,
oh, it's so hard. It's so expensive. Yeah, 100%.
Sony makes an awesome product. Nikon makes an awesome product. And I, you know, I don't curl my nose up to any of it, but I'm just not familiar with it. So.
Well, even I switched to Fuji there for a little bit because the Canon, the R5 wasn't out yet. So I switched to Fuji. The video was great. I loved the video, but I still had the adapter and I still used all my Canon lenses. And then when the R5 was out and once I was comfortable, I just jumped back to Canon and I still had all the lenses from like 2012. Right. So it makes sense. Nice. And
do you use that, RF to EF adapter that's got the, where you can drop in your filters? Is that what you do for video?
Yeah. Joe and I both, so we have the one EF to RF adapter that's got the ring on the control ring on it. And then we also have the variable ND. So I have the variable ND in mind, but I leave it in there. So I literally have one on one camera, one on the other. And that's when you go to grab the other camera and go shoot. Well, this 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, I had this issue. There was a Merlin in the back tree or whatever. I went and grabbed my R5 and I'm in a hurry. I put my 100 to 400, run out there. I'm like, why the hell am I shooting at 12,000 ISO? It's middle of the daytime. Well, of course, I forgot my variable ND was on there, right? So it is a bit of a pain in the ass. And the problem is when you take the variable ND filter out of it, it won't shoot. You have to put a blank in there.
Yeah, I heard that.
But now I'm actually using a matte box on the video side. You can probably see it's actually right behind there. I have a matte box on the video side and with a case basically. So it's got filters that actually drop in and you can magnetize them right to the matte box itself. So for video, it's a way better system. It works for photo as well, but case has got some other photo filters that we use as well. Just trying to separate the scenario is better. As I get older, I think it's separating the scenario is easier in my head than trying to jump back and forth on the video and photo side.
And that neutral density filter, the variable, does that, if it's in the weakest setting, does that reduce any light at all?
There's still a stopper two there. Yes, absolutely.
Still about a stop. Yeah. Still about a stop. Yeah. Okay. So that's what we've noticed. So we're trying to, at the end of the day, to remember, we got to get that off and just put on the plain old adapter, you know, the last hour or so, unless we're doing video. Cause you know, near the end of the day, every stop counts, right? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that ND on there. So we'll just switch them out. Right. So,
and when I'm doing, when we're doing video, so I always shoot everything at 24 frames per second, most of the time, unless I'm doing 60 frames or 120 frames or whatever. So when it's low light conditions at 24 frames per second, the ideal shutter speed is 1/50th of a second. So you can go so much longer than photos. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Yeah, it's a battle back and forth in our head we've had for multiple, the last couple of years. Hey, Joe, should we shoot video? Should we shoot photo? I'm just going to do both. No, it just
you can't.
Either I'm going to go out shooting photo that day or I'm going to go out shooting video that day. And it's just easier. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I very rarely try to do any video with the R5. I have it set up to where it shoots everything flat.
Right.
So to, you know,
like a log file,
and I use Final Cut Pro. Of course I have Premiere. Whatever the Adobe one.
Yeah,
is.
Adobe Premiere. But yeah.
I haven't used it in so long. I don't remember how to use the damn thing. Oh. So I was like, you know, I'm tired of messing with this thing. I'm just going to, buy Final Cut Pro.
Sure.
And use it. And it's been, a lot easier to work with, I think. And, that's how I do all my little panning shots.
Remember I messaged you and asked you if you're actually using an app on your phone to do the, you know, quick cuts and stuff, but you had said you'd done it all through Final.
Yeah. And but I don't build the reel there. I literally get the still image that I want to put in my reel and I create the, however long I want that to be. And then I save it to my phone and that's where I build my reels. I don't do any,
oh, I see.
Because I don't know. I haven't tried putting the audio track in Final Cut Pro and timing it that way.
I see. So you're doing that pan or that zoom in or whatever, just that small little clip in Final, boom, into your phone. And then, yeah, it's easy enough to make the reel then, right? So, because your behind the scene video on your phone anyways, because you're recording it with your phone.
Yeah, or anything that whatever I tweak in Final Cut Pro, I'll dump onto the phone. Like if I have to, the behind the scenes stuff I shoot in Apple ProRes or whatever, most of the time, and if I need to tweak it, then I'll dump it back on the phone. But yeah, I got a horrible work process. I need to do some YouTube and to pick up some tips I mentioned in our pre-show conversation about, I have subscribers on my Instagram and I've been showing some tutorials on how to do that. Cause I get a lot of people asking me, how do you do it? Well, I just give a blanket answer, Final Cut Pro. But if you want to learn more, I have a step-by-step and I show you in my subscribe. So you subscribe 1 month, you could dump it. It costs you $5. I'm not getting a ton of subscribers, but,
So they just go on Instagram, Mark, and they just subscribe right through Instagram. Is that how they find that?
It's there's like a tab where you can follow. And then if you look over to the right, there's a subscription tab and you click on it and it tells you that you can cancel at any time. And but it's $4.99. I think once your account gets to a certain level, Instagram offers that option. And I don't know, I would kind of hemmed and hawed back and forth whether I wanted to do it or not. Cause that meant I had to do content for both. And I really need to do some more subscriber content. But what I'm finding is either everything's got to be 90 seconds long or I got to go live.
Oh, I see.
So if I want to take it longer than 90 seconds, which, I don't know how many outtakes it takes me to do a damn clip of something simple. I don't like the way I said it. And I'll just keep going over and over and over until I get the way I need it. But it's either 90 seconds or I can go, up to, what is it, an hour or 45 minutes or something on a live event.
Oh, okay. So subscriber content is all basically reels, is it?
No, I don't do, it's more tutorial stuff. Like I give a tour of the camp or two, and I've actually tried to do some a live event out shooting some sawwood owls, and I've got the I don't have the live video because it wouldn't allow me to save it, even though I had cell signal. I didn't have a strong enough service.
So
I was out there, I had the camera set up, I had the owl and eye level in the tree, and I'm talking and I was like, this is going to be awesome. And I had a couple of people watching, so they were the only ones that got to see it. And then when I went to save it, it kept time and out and error, and it wouldn't take it. So I,
oh no, that's too bad.
I was bummed. I was like, well, this isn't going to work, because that was the whole intent, was to show subscribers, you know, some stuff that sure. not everybody else gets to see.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So now I recently learned how to screen records on my Mac. And then of course I got to record it in 1080,
1920 by 1080.
Yeah, there you yeah. go. But it's vertical.
Oh, yep. 1080 by 1920. Yeah.
So then I can show my subscribers how I edit something or you know, because that seems to be what people want to see, is how to do the panning effect.
Sure.
And mm-hmm. and how to edit. And I'm, you know, I'm no whiz at editing. I know some tricks that maybe a lot of people don't know, but I don't sure. do yeah. I don't have to do a lot of stuff to mine, because I expose properly. But yep, you know, right. sometimes the lighting's not that good, and you know, you take what you can get and you fix it in post processing. So,
so what are you doing, Mark? So when you're out there, you're taking a tripod and you're attaching your phone to a tripod, and then you're recording yourself. Like, is that what you do?
No, it's so.
Okay.
I have the camera on the tripod with it lined up on the owl. And then I've got my phone in my hand or on a
gimbal. Oh, I get you. Yeah, yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You do a lot of BTS stuff like that. You're kind of moving that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's seems to be pretty popular.
I thought in this case here, you're like, you had it recording you as you were shooting, and you were talking into the phone, like it was mounted on something else.
Oh,
right?
No, not yet. I actually on my Really Right Stuff tripod, not this Photo Pro one, but the older tripod I have, I got a mount on the gimbal that lets me put my handheld DJI, I think it's the OM6, that's okay. a cell phone gimbal. Have you seen those?
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. those things are amazing. Like I said, that's, I had a viral video on our fifth wheel that I talked about before the show started, but I shot that thing blew up, just showing the inside of my camper. I'm kind of going through, people ask me if I had a drone because it was so smooth.
Until they see your reflection in the mirror, right?
Yeah. but yeah, it's super smooth. I've been really impressed with it. I've had the last three models that they had, and just kept upgrading. I kind of wish I hadn't got the last one, the OM5. You can actually leave the phone and everything in the open position and turn the power off, and then you can just turn the power back on. But with the newer one, when you close it, that's the only way to kill the power. Otherwise your battery just runs down. So I don't like that feature. So don't get the OM6, get the OM5.
Okay. And is that video on your Insta? Like, can somebody scroll down and find that video? Or
you got to go way down, probably this summer. Yeah. The problem when you're a wildlife content creator and you post anything that's not wildlife, nobody gives a crap.
That's the thing. You know what? That kind of segues into a question we have here now. Yes, you got to keep your accounts niche specific. So if it's going to be wildlife, it's going to stay wildlife. Now, I started following your other account. And it's like a portrait wedding kind of an account.
Yeah,
like, I think that's fairly new to you.
It's like heavy. No. Well, yeah, that account is because if you were to go to the very beginning of time with my wildlife account, there's all that stuff. Same stuff is there. But the portrait one I kind of added because to get like a lot of the people that I shoot weddings for are referrals. I don't advertise and I got wedding planners that line me up, but they go to my website and they're like, this guy, all he does is shoot wildlife. He does.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
Yeah. So they're like, I don't think he's going to be a very good wedding photographer, but
exactly. Exactly.
And anyway, so I built that and hell, I haven't posted anything on that in months.
Okay.
Well, I guess I did try a couple reels here recently, but, I need to start posting on there, especially if I want to keep, you know, booking weddings or portrait sessions. But you know, it's got 400 followers, you know, good luck for anybody seeing it. So,
is a lot of your portrait and wedding stuff word of mouth these days, or
that's most all of it is.
Yeah,
and of course, I just got on Facebook right after I kind of blew up on this past November. So I started that back up, but I dumped my previous Facebook account, which it was all portrait wedding stuff. Back in 2020, cause the whole politics thing, everybody was just going batshit crazy. Just, you know, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, I was just like, I'm done. So I dumped it. I didn't want any part of it. And now I found out you can get paid for reels, on Facebook. Of course I get paid for real views on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And, so I was like, and I found out you can make more on Facebook with less views. So I was like, well, but I got to get up to 1,000 followers. So everybody follow me on Facebook.
Okay. So
good to know.
Well, obviously all this is going to be on the video and then the description. Yeah. And stuff. So you're saying with Facebook, you can start monetizing the reels after 1,000 followers.
Yeah. I think you have to have 1,000 to be offered to, it's an invite. So it may not happen right at 1,000. I don't know, but
sure.
So anyways, I'm basically copying Instagram reels and dumping them on Facebook.
Sure. 100%.
And it's just less work. And, you know, I'm just trying to build some kind of an audience. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, I think, 3 million views will make you about $1,200 a month in views there, where it takes 11 million views to get 1,200 on Instagram.
Oh, interesting.
Per 30 day cycle. So yeah. When you go to people that don't know this, when you got a 30 day window, you guys up in Canada don't have this, this option to get paid for real views.
I think there probably is. We're just not that high.
No. Yeah. I think I've found out from some other Canadians that that might not be available, but
okay.
I guess they could chime. They could probably drop a comment on your YouTube let us know.
Yeah, but, you
betcha.
That'd
be great. Yeah.
But anyways, what happens is, say your period starts from the 5th of March to the 5th of April. Whatever you post in that 30-day window, you can post up to 150 reels in a month.
Okay.
And but if that blows up, your last reel of the month blows up on the last day, you're not getting paid for those views after.
Okay.
So once 30 days is up, anything you post in that window, you're not getting paid for those views.
Interesting.
It might draw more people in, which, sure. You know, I still have videos that I posted back that I'm still getting lots of likes and comments and views on, but, but yeah, your whole pay window goes. So, it's tough. The first $100 is easy, but, then that second $100, you basically need a million views, total views to get that. So, if you think, and then there's a whole nother tier, above that. I haven't reached that level, but you can make quite a bit more, if you're got even bigger accounts. So,
So do you the vertical videos now, aside from Instagram and Facebook, I think that you have a TikTok as well, right? And do you also post them as YouTube shorts as well? Because technically you can kind of use that vertical video for four different things, right?
So I've only got a couple shorts on YouTube, and I've got a couple goofy. I got a spotting scope review video that's horrible, but
I seen it.
I watched it too.
Yeah. I seen it.
Did it put you to sleep?
No, it was good. It was good.
Yeah. Anyways, I can talk to you guys. Or an audience, and I'm okay. But when I got to talk to a green light on my computer screen or my phone, I can't complete a sentence. I got to stop and start over. Like, my wife is like rolling half the time laughing at me because I can't, I don't know what it is, but as soon as I hit the record button, I'm all tongue tied and it's just,
I hear you.
Yeah.
Too funny.
And so that was a struggle to get that one. But now I'm getting more comfortable, like with these live events, which I hate that you can't actually talk to the people watching. I mean, you are talking to them, but you can't hear them. And a lot of times my wife, I'll have her read out some of the comments to me because I'm recording it on my phone. So, you know, I, I'm way overdue for some glasses, let me tell you. Because I have a hard time, you know, unless I'm up, you know, arm's length from the phone, I can't read them. So
yeah,
it's tough. So I, you know, but yeah, so I get on these, you know, you get a little bit of butterflies when you hit the record button, you start the live event. And then once I get going, I'm fine. But
the first few minutes, eh? Even us trying to start the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once you get going, it's awesome, right? You know? Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. So, you know, just I'm going to keep trying to do these live events and try to keep adding stuff to subscribers. And, mm-hmm. you know, if people can try it out for a month, if that doesn't work, you know, I appreciate everyone that follows me for sure, but, and subscribes, but
sure.
But yeah, I'm just trying to, you know, get little different revenue sources, you know, to try to help subsidize my not so good retirement check that I'll be getting.
Yeah. Well, these days passive income of any sort helps. Right. So it's just, yeah. You know,
it's multiple streams. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's just, yeah. You know, like, you know, if you're going to try and make a living just selling wildlife photos, it's going to be tired. If you're going to mm-hmm. try and make a living wildlife stock, you know, that's going to be hard. But, you know, if you do try multiple venues and you got money trickling from all of them, if one's not doing too good this month, but something kind of blew up that month, you know, it really helps, right? So,
mm-hmm. yeah, and 100%. I, you know, so I've made, in photography, I've made probably 95% of my money in weddings. Mm-hmm. That the money is just way better than any print sales that I've ever had.
Sure. It can be very lucrative weddings. Yeah. I did them for over 20 years too, Mark. So,
and I shoot and I don't even deliver prints. I shoot digital edit, deliver 600 to 800 images. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, full day of shooting and, mm-hmm. You know, and then I probably got 20 hours of editing, probably the worst mm-hmm. being the culling. That's mm-hmm. that takes probably longer than anything. And then, you know, sell some, you know, prints here and there, because the way I have mine set up is that my client's portrait and wedding, I'm just basically charging for me to shoot, and then I'm selling them prints at basically my cost plus a small markup. So mm-hmm. and they don't even have to do that, they can just download them. I give them the digital rights to sure. them. So
oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, and then, aside from that, you know, I sell some wildlife prints and mm-hmm. get paid monthly on Instagram reel views and, mm-hmm. That little tiny bit of subscriptions that I got going right mm-hmm. now. And, mm-hmm. you know, so
nice,
but, yeah, you know, I'm hoping to maybe start doing some workshop stuff, you know, take people out to shoot or show them how to use their camera or, mm-hmm. So that might be something I'll be doing, you know, in maybe the distant future, or maybe, you know, sooner than later, but
sure.
Absolutely. So yeah, no, one-on-ones is a good, you know, a lot of, people I know out here really enjoy the one-on-ones, you know, you take them out for a day or a half day and, you know, it's pretty wide open to, you know, even just sitting there going through camera settings, getting the camera set up. Going out shooting, doing a bit of editing, like, you know, kind of a day in the life sort of thing. People just love that, you know, and it's personal one-on-one attention. So that's something you should certainly add to your repertoire there, you know, on your website or whatever, one-on-ones with Mark, you know, that kind of thing to you. So,
or even aside from workshops, people are doing like the photo tours, right? They're just taking them around different mm-hmm. locations, right? So
I was thinking about doing that. Of course, you need a permit to guide in Yellowstone or the Tetons,
sure,
mm-hmm. And Glacier too. So I've got to get that first, and then mm-hmm. once I'm legal, then we'll.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. We'll, it's the same that. Up here, Mark.
We do the same thing. Up here. Yeah.
Everywhere. Kananaskis, Jasper, Banff. I said Kananaskis.
Waterton.
Yeah. We all need business licenses and all this mm-hmm. kind of stuff to operate legitimately. You know, you need your liability, your insurance, yeah. and all this kind of stuff. Right. So,
and in Canada, the national park is not just a global, and you're not just across the country. It's per park. Right. So you have to actually,
I got to find out if that's the same case here. I haven't really looked into it too deeply, but sure. if you get one for the Tetons, you have to have one for Yellowstone.
Yeah. So, yeah. It adds up fast.
But, yeah, one but, time you I, know. I thought about buying a luxury sprinter van with six captain chairs in the back and,
oh, nice.
And, you know, taking people out, like you can drive North Yellowstone all, mm-hmm. all winter long. You wouldn't be able to go into West Yellowstone, but you can mm-hmm. at least drive between Gardner and Cook City, mm-hmm. which, you know, frankly is to me is the best part of Yellowstone, mm-hmm. for wildlife when it comes to wildlife. So mm-hmm. especially if you're a wolf watcher or whatever, I mean,
yeah.
I think wolves are neat. But you know, to me, like coyotes and fox, I'm legally allowed to get within 25 yards of them. So to me, that's mm-hmm. a more interesting subject than a pea on the side of the hill.
yeah,
sure.
Just, I, you know, I actually passed up a wolf this past weekend. I went to Yellowstone, or not this weekend, but the previous. I didn't even get my camera out. I saw one that was maybe 100 plus yards out that was kind of lunging through the snow, kind of hopping because it was too deep. Yeah. And it was collared and mm-hmm. just like, yeah, not interested. And like, if I pull up to the wolf watchers with all the scopes and like, what are you looking at? And they're like, oh, there's some wolves out there, and it'll be like, they'll look like ants on the side of the hill. And
yeah.
And I get it that, you know, people love wolves and they're fascinated with them. And I am too, to some extent, but mm-hmm. the photography purposes, nah, I'm not getting my gear out for that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. You get a lot more intimate with the coyotes and the foxes and that kind of thing. Right. So,
yeah. So, but
no, 100%.
Yeah. And I almost had a red fox that was hunting and it jumped up, but it was coming straight at me. And it leaped, but it was kind of in a ditch, in a wooded area. Mm-hmm. Not a man-made ditch, but just a little ravine. And it was a horrible spot to do it. And but he came up empty handed and so did I just got that one, that I've on my recent post and, yep. Got a couple frames, but, they weren't super sharp. So, mm-hmm. you know, sure. nothing to write home to mom about. So,
right.
but a crazy cool experience, right?
Yeah. 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 So you know, it was a pretty quiet trip. I'd have to say I was going to, I love photographing bighorn sheep, mm-hmm. You know, obviously moose, elk, there's a set of bighorn sheep, not in a specific area. You can almost always count on them. Mm-hmm. They've actually moved out of the park, over the last couple of years. Cause I always knew a set of cliffs I could go to and they'd be there mm-hmm. every time I'd come. Like, you knew you're going to get bison. You knew you're going to get bighorn sheep.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, so used to people that they're not trying to run away from you. So,
sure.
But anyways, I'm heading home. I got one ram in the park and he's kind of broadside. It's a horrible shot. He's on the side of a cliff and, kind of feeding. And it's just like, it was garbage. Mm-hmm. And on the way home, my last day, I'm leaving, the park. I'm out of the park actually. And I'm like, I just decided to turn in and lo and behold, there's one lone ram the most recent ones I just posted.
Yeah. I seen that. Yeah.
He crosses the road, starts walking up the side of this, steep, hillside. And I get some distance between me and him and I climb up above him. So as he comes up, I got some pretty decent shots, I think. So, and nice. That was shot, you know, wide open at 2.8.
Yep.
Yeah.
At about 25 yards. So it was nice. And tight.
Yeah. No kidding. Nice. Right. Wow.
Yeah, so,
jeez.
But, so what is your favorite subject to photograph here? If there is there one, if you had to pick one, Mark.
Oh yeah. Well,
it's hard, I mean, as a wildlife photographer, I know, but
you know, I obviously, bull elk and when they're bugling, mm-hmm. Can't beat that. A bull moose, mid-November,
mm-hmm.
you know, grizzlies anytime, I guess. But, you know, there's those rare occasions when, you know, they're less than 100 yards sometimes, which is nice, but
yeah.
But you know, it's, yeah, I don't, it'd probably be, you know, and then of course the bighorn sheep,
mm-hmm.
we had a, I'm not going to disclose the location, but we had these world record rams actually one died of natural causes here in Montana, and they're in this hard to get to spot. And anyways, somebody decided it was a good idea to turn mountain lions loose, and they decimated the herd.
Oh, so I guess
they relocated a bunch of them in kind of southwest Montana. And so I haven't been out to that spot to see what's left, but I heard the big monsters aren't there anymore. So hopefully they weren't taken and they just moved them, but so it's going to take a while to build that population back up. But it was so close to where I live. It was, you know, about an hour's drive. So,
oh, wow.
Wow. Crazy.
That's too bad.
Yeah. So, but yeah, you know, bighorn sheep, when they're not stuffing their face, they're pretty good to photograph. So that's the worst thing, is just trying to get them to stop eating, you know, on their own. Yeah. Obviously I'm not going to stop their behavior,
but 100%.
Of course. Yeah.
But yeah. And, you know, a dream trip would be to go to New Zealand to photograph the red stag roarer with that's something I'd like to do one day. And I've gotten an offer. We'll see if it pans out, but definitely like to go do that. And then I did get offered a Africa trip to Kenya. I can't remember the specific spot, but I need 10 of you to go with me. Yeah, because then my trip's free.
Free, yeah, exactly. Oh, nice. That's awesome.
With maybe a little commission to go with.
Yeah, 100%. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So what do you do to, you know, we can always improve, right? Like, we're always learning. Like, what do you use, or what do you do to improve your photography? Like, is it listening to podcasts? Are you watching YouTube videos? Are you reading? Are you like, you know, I'm a big YouTube guy. I love YouTube. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've got a bunch of guys I follow, you know, and there's still a lot to learn. So what do you do for your education? Like, what's.
Yeah. So, you know, I feel like on the still image side, there's nothing else for me to learn. I feel like I know, I don't want to sound condescending, but I think I know more than most, or at least I'm up there with the skilled photographers. And the video is where I suck. And, you know, so I feel like if I need to learn anything, if I need to learn how to do Final Cut Pro, if I need to learn how to do Premiere Pro, it's all YouTube. Like, I'm not spending 100%. Any money on courses. I'm not, I learn by watching other people do. And then me practicing and perfecting that. So the more I do something, the easier it is to do it. That's how I improve. It's, you know, like if I need to learn how to do a certain technique I came up with that panning technique. I had to do some YouTube to find it. So
sure.
I'm not going to take the credit, but I can't remember who I found, but it took work and work to find. Like, the hardest part of YouTube is typing in what you want to find. Like, 'cause it's out there. Trust me. Like, and I have people always tell me, you know, about wanting to go to college to get a college degree in photography. And yeah, that's probably gives you some great marketing skills and give you an extra edge in some ways, 'cause you got the credentials and whatever. But frankly, I don't know if you've seen Good Will Hunting. Where the guy's talking to him in the bar, Matt Damon. And he's like, you could have got, you know, $50 late or 50 cent late charges at the public library and could have got your, learned all that stuff. And
yeah,
I feel like education. YouTube's the same way.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, it's just the stuff on YouTube is just insane what you can learn. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to start maybe sharing some of that. So I'm going to slowly start putting content on there.
Sure.
Try to build a channel, but it'll be painful, I'm sure, because, you know, the whole editing and Final Cut Pro, I know the basics, but, you know, trying to put it all together and throw a music track to it. And then you got the whole copyright infringement stuff. And it's just like, yeah, it's, there's a lot to learn, but like I said, that's how I try to improve. Is if I feel like I want to learn how to do something new, I get on YouTube and I just start watching stuff. So,
well, Chris, yeah. Can you address that with the copyright?
Yeah. So I run a video business. So basically we do video and photography. I actually subscribe to a company called Soundstripe. So Soundstripe is all across North America, and basically it's licensed music. So there's a subscription fee per month, or you can pay for a year, and then you have all the options to use any music that is on that site. It's not an extra charge as part of your subscription, and you can use that for any of your videos. Those videos can go on any of your YouTube channels, on TikTok, on Instagram, on all that kind of stuff. It's just not popular music, right? But they've got all the genres. I mean, you're not going to find Metallica or something on there, but you'll find something like that on there for sure, right? So, but that's basically the easiest way to go, is to subscribe to a company that actually you have licensed music from and use that content for sure. So on our YouTube channel, I have three YouTube channels, one Joe and I share, and I have two others, and I use licensed content on all those from Soundstripe.
I know there's some of those services, but like I said, if you want to try to use the new popular music, you know, I mean, there's, I guess you could do a screen record to get the video or the audio, and then you could throw it in there and just not post it with the audio content, and then you could get the popular song off of Instagram and line it up, and it would, you could make that work.
Part of the problem is that it'll probably get taken down, because basically, like, if you create a reel, your video, create it on Instagram, use popular music on Instagram, and then save that video and put it on YouTube.
You can't do that.
You can't do that. Right. So,
But I'm saying a workaround to use Instagram music on an Instagram post, you could, and build your reel in Final Cut.
Oh yeah.
You could, if you could get the audio to kind of play in the background so that you could time it. Don't include the track, because it's not going to be a substandard quality.
Gotcha. Yep.
And then you just kind of line up that same popular track in, on Instagram. So, but yeah, I sometimes I'll save my video to put on Facebook, and it won't let me download with a song.
Yeah.
So those don't make it to Facebook. I'm not going to go and try to recreate something there, but YouTube's even more fickle about, that kind of stuff. But yeah, you know, that's what I do. Like I said, if I want to learn stuff is YouTube, and I don't really go out and buy books or magazines or any of that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So,
well, if you have any video questions, let me know. So I can
help you out. Yeah, I'll definitely pick your brain.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So but my biggest thing with the R5 is, like, you know, if you go into video mode,
yeah,
I seem like the 1DX, I could look through the eyepiece and I could hit the autofocus button and it would focus and you could follow the square.
Yeah.
But I don't seem to have that with the R5. It seems like I have to put my head back and touch the screen that looks blurry to me because
you need glasses.
I need glasses. So that's kind of frustrating.
Sure.
And then if you tap it, it tries to take a picture actually that's in still images, but
yeah, you just have to have it configured the right way. I mean, actually I find the R5 focuses better to the eye on the video side than the R5C, which is the cinema camera, which has the hybrid photo and cinema menu built into it, right? The R5 actually has the tracking. So the cinema menu in the R5C actually comes from the C70, the actual cinema camera.
Oh.
So the eye tracking in the R5 is actually better. So I still use the R5C for video all the time, but for the R5, even like for this exact moment, I can actually see the eye tracking my eye right this second on the R5, which I'm using as a webcam right now. Mm-hmm. So you just got to be set up correctly. And yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I just need to get on YouTube and watch a couple more videos on it just to see what I'm not doing right.
But oh, sure. Yeah.
Like I said, my iPhone does about 95% of what I needed to do for the behind the scenes stuff. And occasionally do, if I have a bald eagle or an owl that's perched that I know is not going to move, then it's easier to do the video then.
Sure. Yeah. So, sure.
With the camera. And then I've been shooting vertical video with those.
Right.
So, which I know would kill you if you needed to use it for anything else.
But, right.
Mm-hmm. But well, the resolution's nice.
Yeah. And we still actually use the vertical, like even on our podcast, we still use the vertical videos. And then what we do is we just, you know, in Premiere, I just layer it. So the layer with the same video and blow out the background and blur it out. So it's kind of not over black. It's over the actual video that you're shooting. Right. So
yeah,
it makes it a little more entertaining, right. Than that. Yeah. But
yeah. And then so you guys are still posting mainly still images for the most part on your Instagram.
I do a lot of video on my own now.
Yeah. In the last two or three, we're just kind of corny reels. You know, we're having fun out there and stuff. Yeah. I posted a bull elk bugling there. It's probably shot up to about 7,000 views or something in about a day and a half, but I haven't had anything. I had a Pika video.
No.
With a stupid voiceover go up to like 350,000 views or something. A Pika running with some grass in its mouth, you know. But yeah. Some of these bull elk and some of these grizzlies and stuff. Yeah. I haven't gotten anything maybe over 15,000 views for a lot of these reels, but like, well, you said, you just got to kind of hit your stride. You got to hit one, right?
Yeah, but, you know, I still see the people are getting thousands and thousands of likes on still images. I'm not sure why, but some of them are.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously there's a lot of great images out there, but I feel like a landscape image or a wildlife image on a little tiny image on your phone, a still image just is frankly kind of boring to me now. And I feel like that's why I started introducing that panning effect. Because you can show from one edge of the frame, or you don't have to do the whole frame, but and it shows you more of the image, and it just looks more dramatic and dynamic than a still image does. And sure. And like I said, they just don't do that well for me when I do post them.
Well, and that's what Instagram wants. They want video. They want reels, right? They want that kind of content, and they've made it pretty obvious. Because I mean, it was almost overnight where. You know, like you said, you get thousands of likes, and I was gaining a lot of followers and everything. And then overnight, I'm like 150 likes on this picture. Like, really? Like, it's just, it was basically photo the video overnight. I'm just, so it's been a struggle for me. I know Chris, he's a video expert. So, but for me, trying to figure out all this stuff in reels and trying, it's been a process, but I'm getting the hang of it. I mean, it's, you know, I'm able to put short little things together now using Premiere Rush on my phone, right?
Yeah,
you
know? I've played with that a little bit.
Yeah, so, and it's super easy to do, putting a bunch of stuff together and transitions and a little bit of music and whatever like that. So it's getting there, but it's obviously the way it's going. So
yeah, I just still find that the Instagram app itself is the easiest way to put a bunch of clips together.
In fact,
I started creating folders to save my behind the scenes. So I'm not scrolling on my phone, you know, to go back 6 months, you know, 3,000 videos or whatever.
Exactly.
You know, I have a 1 terabyte iPhone 13 Pro, and I don't know, at some point it's going to get filled up.
Every upgrade grade is going to be bigger, because I mean, just the file sizes are getting that much larger and better too, right? The content. So
yeah,
when I'm out in the field on the video side, I'm always shooting 8K on the R5 or R5C. Oh, wow. And the only reason I'm doing that is for future proofing, right? So down the road, the stock footage companies aren't asking for 8K content now, but they will at some point. It might be 5 years down the road, I don't know. But at the end of the day, I'm using that content, the 8K content, to create 4K. So for example, if I can't crop in, it's still 8,000 pixels wide. So for video, I can crop in and still like 50% and still get a beautiful 4K video. So I've been using all my video clips for multiple purposes. So using it for YouTube, using it for the 8K for future, I'll just stick that away on my server. And then I put the 4K on YouTube. I can crop a vertical video easier with that and use it for a reel. So it's kind of multi-purposing. And we were talking about passive income earlier. So I've been starting to put video content up on stock footage site. There's a company in Canada called Blackbox. They're worldwide And they actually currently, they're a stock footage aggregator. So you submit it to them and they actually submit it to currently 9 different stock footage companies, Adobe Stock, Shutterstock, all this. So you don't have to submit it to everyone individual. So another passive income concept or idea that you might want to consider down the road as well, if you start getting into video a little bit more too. So.
Yeah, I'll have to definitely look into that.
Joe and I keep talking about the fact that we're setting up time lapses while we're actually out there shooting, so you can use that content for other things too, right? So.
Yeah, I saw your time lapse on the frozen lake with the. You sent me some behind the scenes with the wind dripping through there, Joe.
Yeah, you sent me those too. Those were hilarious.
Yeah, that was a little breezy. Yeah, for sure, man. It was good, but.
I've always wanted to. One of these days, I'm going to play around with that. Recently I just picked up DJI Mini 3 Pro drone.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to try to go ahead and get my drone pilot license so I can actually legally charge.
Nice.
But you know, flying it's fun, but flying and filming is a bitch. I can't.
I haven't mastered that yet.
Oh my God. And you know, I even bought their high-end gimbal. Help me out. I can't think of the. Are you familiar with DJ?
Yeah, yeah, I love DJ gimbals. Are you talking about the Ronin?
The RS3 Pro.
Oh, you have the RS3 Pro. Well, yeah. I have the RS2 sitting right there. But yeah it's
yeah. But I bought that with my Instagram view money.
Nice.
And the drone.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, yeah, I have a lot. I have the DJ Air 2S, and I'm an advanced pilot here in Canada. But the problem is with nature stuff here in Canada, well, close to where Joe and I live, it's illegal in all the parks, right? So anything that you get close to the mountains, I'm assuming it'd be that way down there too, right? But we can't fly anything anywhere near.
No drones at all.
So it's a little unfortunate because, you know, I basically do a lot of that for real estate only, right? So.
Yeah, and I actually got that because the drone, thinking that I'd get some hero shots of, you know, me packing the gear, walking up to the edge of a cliff and getting the flyby but I'm basically waiting for things to warm up a little bit so I can get a little bit better at flying it. So
sure. Well, the beauty part of it is you can just set that, right? And then just let it do it, track you. So you won't actually have to worry about trying to film yourself.
Yeah, true. But I'm always trying to come up with some new ideas for reels because my engagement's kind of dropped off here the last couple weeks.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
I'm still gaining followers, you know, about 100 a day.
Sure.
But I was hoping to get to 200,000 before it slowed down, but you know, it is what it is. So
well, the Cousin Eddie one was a classic one at Christmas there.
Yeah, you know, I didn't get monetized for that, by the way. They flagged that one.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. Twice. I did it last year too. And they basically demonetized it. I wasn't getting paid for it, but I was like, I don't care. I'm going to post it anyway. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. It's hilarious.
So Mark, I mean, we're getting close to the end here. I got a couple more questions for you. What is your biggest challenge right now that you see in your photography career? So I know you said you're going to be retiring. You're going to be doing the KOA. But as far as the photography career portion goes, like what is it right now? Is it social media? it's obviously income based too, but what do you see? Like, what is it now that you're working on to,
That's just it. I need to start working on it. My wildlife account is pretty big. So, when I post stuff, a lot of people see it, but only about 10% of my followers actually see it. And, so just trying to get people to my website, I'm getting a lot of product deals. Photo ambassador for the Photo Pro E9. You can see the tripod in the background.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
But anyways, they're sending me a couple more of those tripods, other tripods to test out and review. And I got the Gura Gear backpack sent me some stuff, and then Cotton Carriers sent me chest harnesses, and I got spot and scopes with Ghost Sky optics, and the Unlimitedville internet. Wireless internet sent me a router modem that I'm you know, all these are giving me kind of commissions. And the Knicks handmade boots out of Spokane, Washington.
Yeah,
they,
Yeah, those have been really nice. I was super stoked when they decided to ask me, you know, to basically do kind of a collaboration deal with them, and a bunch of great guys and gals out there. But yeah, those have been great. But yeah, so I got, you know, got these partnership deals to keep kind of coming in. I'm not going to get rich off any of these, but every little bit helps. And but yeah, you know, the biggest obstacle I think is just trying to get traffic, you know, like especially like weddings. My intention was to shoot, you know, maybe two weddings a month. And that's not looking too good right now. I've got two booked for the year right now. So, so usually I'd probably have about 6 to 8 by now. So, so yeah, just, you know, maybe I'm gonna have to start advertising, or, you know, just kind of working at a little bit more. And obviously I need to work on my other Instagram account, my YouTube 100%. Account. And I guess just trying to find balance the time between my part-time work, which I'll be doing at KOA, you know, trying to have time to get out to the field to shoot. That's where I'd meet a lot of people. I'm a pretty sociable guy. When I'm out in the field, I'm talking to people and answering questions. I'm not rude. I'm a pretty likable guy, I think. So I, you know, I like to help other people and, but I can spot somebody, you know, the old grumpy pants, that you see out in the field and you know, 15, 20 seconds into something, I can tell, like, yeah, I think I'm just going to go the other way. This guy's, he's not going to, you're not going to warm him up. Occasionally I can do it, but I think just trying to balance, you know, time and still have time for family and to go do stuff. It's time consuming, you know, and, you know, I probably spend, in the morning I get up, I try to have a reel kicked out by 7 a.m. Every day, just one a day at a minimum. And, you know, so I might spend 2 minutes putting some clips together, but I'll spend 15 to 30 minutes looking for a damn song. So, yeah, but it, you know, the biggest thing, like I said, is just time. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's
balance
it.
Is a struggle. Think that's,
yeah, for all of us. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah. So last question here, Mark, as a photographer, what's one piece of advice you would give to somebody starting out
this day and age?
Cause it sounds like you've been really, I mean, if you look at the, when you started your wildlife career, 2018, 2019 ish, like back then, I mean, that's only really within the last 5 years, 4 to 5 years. And your Instagram and like you've grown, I think, very fast in those 5 years.
Oh yeah,
you know.
Yeah, well, and keep in mind, I only had 19,000 followers last May, and that's all off of reels.
That's unbelievable.
It's all off the reels. So yeah.
So basically, listen to Instagram is what you're saying.
Well, no,
so reels are the way to go.
here's free advice, and I'm sure a lot of people already know it, and you can take it with a grain of salt. But for Instagram, my word of advice is anytime you post, engage with your audience. If somebody comments on your post, a minimum, you need to reply with a thumbs up or thanks or something.
Yeah.
And reply to every single comment. And then you need to go out of your way to like at least 20 like or comment or both on at least 20 other people that don't follow you, just random content, it's stuff that you follow, but like, I like to follow hashtags and not a ton of people. And I just find that by doing that, you know, out of those 20 people, maybe one or two more of those might follow you. So you know, you need to engage with your audience, I guess.
Sure.
Is the biggest thing. And then for somebody just getting started out, you know, gosh, I don't know. In today's world, you know, I guess, buy what you can afford. Don't, you know, if you can afford an expensive or a more expensive tripod, don't be afraid to spend the money on that, because that's going to last you probably for 20, 30 years if you get the right one. And, but, you know, don't get hung up on, on getting the latest and greatest on the cameras. You know, you could buy used. I buy refurbished on almost all my camera bodies. And I've never had any issues. And I buy directly from Canon when I do it. But and same thing with computers. I do that too. But you don't need a ton of lenses. You know, you, I think Canon, I don't know, you probably still get that 400 5.6. It's not even a zoom. If you remember that lens.
Yep. No, I remember it.
Yeah.
Because I had the Sigma version back then.
Yeah. But I see a lot of people in the field shooting that, like, what is it? The 100, 600 or 200 to 600 Tamron or something like that.
Oh, the 150 to 6. Yeah. The 150 to 5 and the 150 to 6. Yeah.
Just get what you can afford. You know, if you want to get committed to wildlife, you know, if you need to get out and shoot squirrels, shoot, you know, doves, whatever. And, you know, and learn, you know, how to get close and not disturb the animals. And, but yeah, I don't know that I have just one piece of advice. I could rattle on all day long, but don't get hung up on buying a bunch of gear would probably be my biggest tip. Even though I've made that mistake and I think we all have, but
oh yes.
Yes. Yeah.
And you're always going to have to upgrade. So to me, if you're going to spend the money, spend it on lenses and tripods and stuff that's going to kind of keep going with you. So,
That's it. Awesome. Yeah. So to your point, just buy the best quality stuff you can at the time. And it, like you said, if you can afford a high-end tripod, like my tripod, it's a Gitzo. It's been with me for, it's going on 15 years.
Wow.
Carbon fiber 6X. I mean, why do I need to change? You know what I mean? Unless it was a weight issue or something like that, but even carbon fiber back then was pretty lightweight. So I use it for video and landscape and, you know, everything. Right. So, so to that point, it's practically cost me nothing over the years. If you spread it out. Right. So it's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Buy the best you can afford for sure moving forward. So.
Yeah. And then, you know, like I tell a lot of people that if they're not going to get into wildlife just to get a 50 millimeter, the 1.8, they call them the nifty 50 and get a standard, you know, body and learn how to take good pictures of that. I think the M50 seems to be the new little mirrorless camera.
Does seem to be that.
So, and you can get the M to RF adapter, I guess that you could still shoot, you know, I don't know what that's a micro 4/3. I don't know what translates.
Yeah. I don't either. Yeah. No, but that's a good point. Yeah, for sure. Yep.
Yeah. So, but just, yeah. And YouTube,
YouTube,
you need to learn something. YouTube.
So not even just photography, man. I learn everything on YouTube.
Yeah. Oh, I'm telling you. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Who needs cable TV anymore? Right. Yeah. You know, it's all there. Right. So.
Yeah, pretty much. So
cool.
Oh, he's back.
back.
Yeah, I'm back to say it's an absolute pleasure, Mark. Yeah. It was really nice meeting you for the first time.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked on social a little bit, you know, following stuff a little bit behind the scene on the DMs and stuff, but I'm really happy you're able to join us. So
yeah, hopefully we can shoot in person one day.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you guys should come down to the Tetons about mid-November and take you around and get you on some bulls. Of course you guys have the big bulls up there in Canada, but yeah, if you can ever come down, let me know. We probably work something out and like we could go shoot together or something. So
made a note. So yeah, we're good.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And the same goes for you, Mark, coming up this way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me get that passport. I definitely want to go and get up to Canada. Cause it's like I said, it's been over 30 years.
Yeah, so yeah.
It's changed a little bit.
We'll get you in some big bulls. Big bull elk up here, that's for sure.
There's some big rams up here too. So
Yeah.
I remember. So
yeah, for sure.
I just didn't have the gear back then. So
yeah. Right. No, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks again, Mark. Really appreciate it. We're gonna sign off here and hope you enjoyed this episode of the Nature Photo Guys podcast. And we will catch you in the next one. Bye for now.
Thanks for watching.
Thanks for joining us on the Nature Photo Guys podcast. If you have any questions, contact us at info@thenaturephotoguys.ca or message us on Facebook and Instagram @thenaturephotoguyspodcast. Visit YouTube and subscribe to our channel to watch all our latest videos. Or follow and listen to our latest podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or on our website at thenaturephotoguys.ca. We'll catch you next time on the Nature Photo Guys Podcast.